Okay, good morning. We are going to get started, and I'm going to regret this, but I'm planning to begin by telling you that I hope to be done by the time my tea has seeped. Because this morning we're just going to finish Ahmed Bet of Yud. We did Ahmed Aleph last time. I did not anticipate it that taking the whole time. So what we're going to do, we're going to recalibrate. We're up to the very, very bottom line of Ahmed Aleph, literally the last four words. And we're going to finish Ahmed Bet today. And hopefully we'll recalibrate. Next week we are in, what's the word? Yes, I'm away. We're in recess. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. And then we'll pick up again in 2 weeks' time, starting with Yud Aleph, and move forward toward the next perek. So, we are on Daf Yud. We are in the middle of responding to the sixth Mishnah of this perek, the second perek of the Masechta, which in the broadest possible terms is talking about exile, about Galus, and the first five Mishnayot we're talking about what are the limits of attentiveness that we require from you, that if you do not exhibit them, you end up going to Galus if you kill somebody by mistake. And the first five Mishnayos outline six exceptions. If you kill somebody by mistake, that is not negligent enough, or it is too negligent for you to go to Galus, but it's not quite intentional or entirely accidental either. So we outlined those a few times, so we're going to pivot now from the sixth Mishnah. We start discussing, now that we've established what warrants you the sentence for exile, what does exile look like? So the sixth Mishnah described how many cities of refuge there need to be, where they are laid out. And we started the discussion on Ahmed Aleph last time. Does it respond to population demands? Because on the surface, it seems unfair that there should be three equally divided cities. That means if you live on the very northern or southern border, you've got to go a whole quarter of the country to get to a refuge city. If you live right in the middle, you've got to go maximum an eighth. So it seems unfair. And our answer was, there's more killings going on in the middle of the country, so there's more of a population that needs to be responded to, and it is addressing needs. Which seems like, on the surface, an arbitrary standard. It might also be an inbuilt assumption that the more urban a place is, the more central the population is, the more people there are, which means there's more crime, and you have to pay even more attention to what's going on around you, because it can be a dangerous place. And then after we spoke about how many cities there are and where they're placed, we spoke about what do cities look like. We said last time that could be a model for if you were designing a jail system in the United States, what should it look like? And we said there are obligations on the community through taxation to support access to water, access to marketplaces, and crucially, access to education, education, education. That was the key. And then we had like the Duff exploded on a discussion of how central education is, the study of Torah is, to insulating us. And at some level, it seems like a mystical reflection. Oh, if you're learning Torah, nothing can ever harm you. Of course, we know through experience in history that there are many scholars of Torah who came to much harm over their lives. So it seems to be less of a metaphysical assumption than a political one. Then if you are educated, if you spend your time in scholarship, you're more likely to have a civilized society and be more attentive to the people around you. Actually, there's a book written by Michael Fishbane called, he was a professor of Bible and Jewish studies. He was my advisor, actually, at University of Chicago. He wrote a book called Sacred Attunement. And it's a long, long book that is incredibly dense and almost impossible to understand on its first reading. But he essentially says the whole idea of Jewish interpretation, Pardes, we're familiar with Pardes, what Pardes stands for? Pshat, Remez, Drash, so that there are these interpretive methodologies that you look at a text in Jewish tradition establishes there are four at least ways to read it. The straightforward way, the homiletic way, the analogical way, and the mystical way. And he suggests that actually these reading practices help us operate as ethical beings, because I'm now going to pay attention to people in four different ways. It just makes me more attentive. So it sounds like education does that. Well, for our sages, that was Ahmed Aleph. And then we finished a note with David's despair, or or expected despair, that David says he heard people saying, when will this old guy die so that his son will be born and we can build the Bet Mikdash? And David sings in the Psalms, and God, I was happy. It meant that my people were in a good place. They couldn't wait for the temple to be built. So I just want you to know, I heard them saying that I want David to die, and I was happy about it. And God's response is actually, your priorities are wrong. Temple's important, and we can talk about the temple when we talk about Kodshim and other Mishnayot, but for our purposes, I would rather have one day of your Torah study, David, than 1,000 sacrifices offered by your son. Which sounds like it could be the rabbis responding to the loss of the temple, but it also sounds like it's a principled idea that ritual has a purpose, but it has nowhere near the significance that education does. And that was the end of the Amud Aleph. So we turn on to Amud Bet, which picks up from the Mishnah that says, okay, you need to designate 6 cities, the Mishnah said. They need to be in these places. And then the Mishnah said, and the bottom gray line, gray section on the bottom line, U'mechavonot lehen drachim. And when you set up these cities, you need to make paths, meaning you have to have roads paved. To these cities. You can't just build the cities and say, and you kill accidentally, you're on your own, get an Uber, and you know, hike your way in. We need to make sure that there's access. And I guess, if it's helpful, this Amud we're going to split into 3 pieces. The first is going to be a question about providence, and that's going to lead us to the first, I guess, 20 lines. Then we're going to have about 15 lines talking about whether the Goel Adam has permission to kill a killer before they get to the city of refuge. If I kill somebody by mistake, God forbid, is the Goel Adam allowed to kill me right now, or do they have to wait for the verdict? That's going to come up. The second part, and then very bottom of the page, the last 10 lines, it's going to be a discussion of some more definitions of what the city needs to look like in order to protect you. So, Tanya, bottom of the page, you said you've got to set up pathways. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Yaakov ben Elazar said, Miklat hayakatov al parashat drachim. And on the roadways, it is not enough just to build roads and say, okay, we don't say we let these manslaughterers, we're putting so much time and effort into these manslaughterers, you know, they should have been more attentive, and I've got to spend money building roadways, that's fine. Rabbi Elazar says, you've got to do more than that. You can't just build roadways, you have to put up signs that say, Miklat. On all these roads, Kadesha Yakir Harotzech V'yifne L'sham, to facilitate the escape of these accidental murderers. And again, you can imagine a cynic saying, you know what, why am I spending my good money on helping these people escape what they deserve? It was complete negligence on their part, but that's this. And Rav Kahana says, what's the source? And Rav Kahana, my Kra, what's the source? Tachin Lacha HaDerech. You should establish for them a way. And he says, it is inconceivable that this means just build a road. That's not actually helpful to give someone a path. A path is not just a noun that means a physical access. It's a noun that means a guidance. You should set them up a guide. You need to make the road not only accessible, but understandable, comprehensible. Full stop. And the next 10 lines are going to be about reflections on providence. Now that we've said you've got to send up these signposts, it makes us wonder, where is God in this whole discussion? Which brings us back to last year's discussion of Tarnes. If I'm killing accidentally, it's not entirely my fault, so free will doesn't quite have to come into it to the same extent. Is God involved? Is God not involved? God's telling me I should set up a path. Why didn't God set up a path? Why is God absent? Seems to be the question. We're now going to look at 3 different ways that sages would introduce a discussion of Ari Miklat. Rav Chana bar Chanina, Patach le'pitcha lahi parshata mehacha. He would begin his discussion of Ari Miklat with the following verse. He'd want to ease the way in, give a little bit of philosophy before. So he would turn to a pasuk from, where is it, from Tehillim. Tov Yashar Hashem, God is good and upright, Al Kain Yerach Ata'im Baderach, and that's why he offers guidance to sinners along the way. So this is Rav Kahana's way. Again, he's expecting his audience of cynics to turn around and say, you know, we're in the ivory tower, we're sitting in the Bet Midrash, we're spending our day in study, and we have to spend so much energy catering to these negligent manslaughterers, it seems unconscionable. So he begins by saying, God is upright. God cares about everybody, not just about the people in the Bet Midrash, not just about those who are pure and pious and innocent. He cares about people who make mistakes. So God sets up pathways for those who are sinners, meaning those who kill by mistake. And then Rav Chaim Bar Chanina added, "Ve'im lechatayim yoreh." And if God sets up guidance for sinners, kal v'chomer letzadikim. Of course, we need to set up guidance for the righteous too. Now, what does that mean? Got to set up guidance for the righteous? If you were to think about a concrete parallel to what we've just said, you need to do for manslaughterers, what might you think you need to do? You need to put signposts up to say, here's our mikvah. What might you think you need to do on this basis?
Signs for the shul.
Right, you'd think maybe you've got to physically put up signs to say, here's the shul, here's the bet midrash, here's the hospital, whatever the case may be. This sentiment has been read a number of different ways. Some read it as providence, God helps sinners and he also helps the good. But I think you could also read it as we just have, that he's saying, you would be right to be cynical if all we did with our tax money was help people in jail and we didn't spend any money on public education. If the budget for public schools was zero and the budget for juvenile detention was millions, you could worthily say, our system is messed up. We only start caring for people once they've gone off the derech. How about we start planning in advance and yoreh letzadikim, start guiding society? So he's kind of catching cynicism in the early stages by saying, you would be right that if all we cared about was helping poor sinners and didn't care about them beforehand, that would be a problem. So kal v'chomer, you're right. Based on this teaching that we need to put up miklat for sinners, we need to start at the youngest age, putting up signs physically and metaphorically so that people live productive lives as well. Rav Shimon Lakish says, Padach lepit chalai parashat me'achai. He will begin his discussion from here. And Rav Shimon Lakish is going to make an astonishing statement that may be one of the more famous pieces from the Gemara Makos. I'm sure some of you have heard it before. We'll get to it. But it seems to be also taken out of context as like representative of Jewish thought. It seems to be in tension with a lot of what we're about to say. It says in our parasha, talking about exile, Asher lo tzadav Elokim ina liyado, talking about what it means to be negligent. If you didn't sit in ambush, you weren't planning this, and God brought it to your hand and somebody died, then you flee. And those three words, and God brought it to your hand, what does that mean? I mean, I didn't plan it, but God brought it to my hand. That sounds like God did it. It wasn't really me. So he says, Kasher yomar mashal lekodmoni. This is what is referred to later in the book of Shmuel Aleph, where it speaks about some early wisdom, Marishaim Yitzei Rasha, that from the wicked, wickedness descends. But Markaz of Medaber, what is going on, Rav Shimon Lakish says, and he's about to explain what he thinks negligence is a product of, usually. It says, B'shnei b'nei Adam is talking about two people, Shaharugu et ha-nefesh, two killers, two people killed somebody. Some of you may be familiar with this. Echad harug b'shoged, echad harug b'nei mezin. Somebody killed accidentally, negligently, and somebody killed intentionally, and in neither case were they witnesses. What usually happens if somebody kills, murders, and there were no witnesses? What happens? Say again?
Nothing.
Nothing, right. There were no witnesses. If somebody kills negligently and there were no witnesses, what happens? Nothing. There were no witnesses. Lazein Adam, Lazein Adam. So what happens? Kadosh Baruch Hu, Maziman, thank you, Mazminan, God invites them, Lupundak Echad, to one in. Sends them a embossed invitation, both of you come. The person who killed intentionally, where do they sit? Under a ladder. Why would you sit under a ladder? Good question, yes. Which I think is going to be a way that we'll reread this. And the person who killed accidentally, negligently, will start coming down the ladder. Vinafal alavahargo, and he'll fall off the ladder and kill the person underneath. And everybody lives happily ever after. So what happens? The person who, Zesharuk b'mezid narag, the person who killed intentionally, he's dead. How is he dead? The guy fell on him. Zesharuk b'shoge golem, the person who killed accidentally without witnesses, ends up going to Golas because there were witnesses this time and he was coming down. And we said, when you're coming down, that's when you come into the category of Golas, and he fell down. Full stop. So that's how Rish Lakish would begin this whole discussion, saying, you think this is all accidental. Providence is involved at every level here. And even though we said the theme of the first parak was justice is approximate, there's little we can do sometimes, God always finds a way. So does this solve all our problems, this story, or are there any holes potentially in this story? It opens up a huge number of... What happened? Why did God not put witnesses in the first case? Was God sleeping during the first episode that he just kind of got into gear after people died? The whole system injects a level of uncertainty into our discussion. And it's quite possible, as Jerry said, why are you sitting under a ladder? Seems like it's an odd thing to do.
Every time someone dies by accident, it implies that they deserved it.
It also sounds like if someone... Right. And actually the Maharsha says... and. What happened to the first guys who died accidentally? When there was no witnesses, somebody died as a result of negligence. Did he deserve it? Marsha said, yeah. In every case, that this was a kind of a system of recompense, justice was unfolding. And this completely robs us of our agency. When it says they happened to come to the same inn, that means like providence forced them, and then he was forced to sit under a ladder. Alternatively, you could read it that God is supervising a human system. And if you kill negligently, what are you more likely to do?
Do it again.
Do it again. You're more likely to come down a ladder without thinking it. And if you are a killer, presumably you value human life quite small. You've got, and if you've got away with it, what tends to happen?
Do it again.
You do it again and you become overconfident. You think, I'm a killer and I get away with it. I'm going to defy all the odds. And what might you do? Sit under a ladder. Well, I've got away with murder. I can sit under, you know, superstition, ladder someone. It's possible that this is describing a case where Mirasha'im Yetzer Rasha, from the wicked wickedness, comes that if you set up a life of negligence, so you set up a life of malevolence, it will perpetuate over time and eventually you will have your comeuppance. Yeah.
This implies that Scarborough
correct.
Which is
problematic.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah, and how many of you heard this anecdote before, by the way, that somebody would go to, they'd come to one place and then, right, so this is often used as, oh, this is Jewish theology. We're about to see a pushback to it, because it is complicated and it's not clear how to read it. So let's see how it goes. Amar Rav Huna, and Rav Huna is going to feature heavily for the next 20 lines. Rav Huna, some people said this was said in the name of Rav Huna, some people said Rav Huna said this in the name of Rav Elazar. We're going to find in every level of canon, from the Torah to Nevi'im to Ketuvim, we're going to find evidence of the following creed. B'derach sha'adam rotze lelech b'amo lichin oto. The pathway a person wants to go, they will be guided down. So this is a pushback. We just had read, the Reish Lakish basically said, God is supervising. You may not want to come to a horrible end, but God's going to guide you there if you deserve it. And now we've got Rav Huna pushback. So well, actually, providence doesn't always follow justice. Sometimes providence just augments your own desire. So if you want to be horrific, God's going to help you be horrific. That's what it sounds like. Is there a problem with that? No. Anyone got a problem with God helping people who want to be horrific being horrific? Say again? Well, number one, it takes away, it takes away my ability to walk away from it. It kind of, in the same way, we'll come up to hardening Pharaoh's heart over the coming weeks. But also, God's now complicit, it seems, at some level, saying, oh, you want to do horrible things? Let's do it together. It's like a horrific description. So again, we need to put some emphasis on what this means. Also, there's a plural here. B'derach sha'adam rotze lelech, the pathway you want to go, molichin oto, they guide him. Who's they? Molichin, they guide him. And this is where some of the commentary say it's talking about angels. As every time you do a good deed, it creates good angels and they help you. And every time you do bad deeds, it creates bad angels and they help you. But that's one reading. There are other readings too. But essentially, it sounds like there is a creed that appears again and again and again. That actually, this is almost the opposite of providence and justice. If you want to do something, God doesn't get in your way. This is what it sounds like. God is not here to hold you by the handrails. You know, you go bowling, you got those bumpers. God is not here to provide those for you. God has given you Torah. We've just spoken about the import of education on the first page. You want to nip this in the bud? Education is the key. And you turn over the page, you think, well, why doesn't God get involved? God is not here to supervise you. He's given you law. He's given you a summons. He's given you talents. And it's up to you. And he's now going to see in three cases, the Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, that this is true, that God permits you to go down the path you wish. Mina Torah, how do we know from the Torah? Dichtiv lo telech imehem, because when Bilam first wanted to go and curse the Jews, God said, no, don't. Like 10 verses later, Bilam says, can I please go? Uchtiv, kum leichitem, and then God says, fine, go with them. Which seems like, why is God changing his mind? Sounds like the creed is, if you want to do it, God is not going to stand in your way. He said, fine, you want to go? I've given you the warning, off you go. That was the Torah. Min Nevi'im, Dichtiv, it says in Nevi'im, in one passage it says, I am the Lord your God who's teaching you lahoil for your benefit, but I will let you go down the path, this path that you go down. Meaning I'm here for your good, but you also, you decide where you're going to go. How do we know from the Ktuvim Dichtiv? Because it says, here, this is taken from Mishlei. Im laleitzim hu yalitz, ula enuyim yiten chen. If you want to go to the scoffers, you may scoff. If you want to go to the pious, you will get grace. Full stop. So that was section 1 of 3 on this Amud. All kind of emerging from the description that we need to put signposts up. Which again is taken as a metaphor that in society we need to provide help for people to go in the right direction. You've got to put sign ups so you can get to Miklat. We had one view that said you also should put up signways to help people get to the right place, which is again from metaphorical terms from the earliest age, set people up for a good life. Don't just come in after they've made a mess and provide some sort of out. And then we've had a description of how far does God help us along the path. And bottom line, it seems to be his help is that he gets out the way. Which means if you're a negligent sinner, you're going to end up in trouble if by your negligence. And if you're an intentional killer, someone's going to come after you, or you're going to get overconfident at some level, but God gets out of the way. Full stop, section 2. Am Rav Huna. Rav Huna says this is like the fifth wide line. Wrote Seach Shigilalit Rimiklat, if somebody killed and got exiled to the city of refuge, they killed negligently. Umatso Gola Dam Bahargo Pater, and if the Gola Dam found you, meaning you're walking along, this would be, you know, really rather unfortunate. You're sitting at the bus stop waiting for the next express bus to take you to Ari Miklat. Someone sits down next to you at the bus and says, oh, how are you doing? Where are you heading? So I'm going to Ari Miklat. Oh, are you visiting? No, I'm actually, you know, I'm fleeing. I killed someone by accident. Oh, who do you kill? Said, oh, that's my brother. Said, oh, well, this is awkward, because now he can kill you. And Rav Huna says he's pater. He is, again, it doesn't sound like mitzvah to kill him, but it sounds like he is perfectly within his rights to kill you and you can do nothing about it. That's Rav Huna's view. There is going to be a brayta that disagrees and says you can't kill someone on the way to Ari Miklat. If once they're there, they then leave, you can kill them. But you can't kill them on the way. Give them a chance is going to be the brayta. But bottom line, Halacha and Rav Huna take the view that they can kill you on the way. As soon as you've killed someone by accident, you are now vulnerable to extrajudicial killing.
Let's say mutter, it says
pater. Yeah, you're vulnerable to it. Not that it's a mitzvah, and we'll see that there are various guardrails set up to try to stop this happening, but he's within his rights. Yeah?
When the goel kills him at the bus stop, he better not sit on the ladder. In other words, the cycle will continue.
Well, he's allowed to.
He's pater, but not mutter.
Oh, so it's not aser. No one's going to say it's aser. But there's a discussion, there's a difference between mitzvah and mutter. So it's going to, if you say it's pater, it means it's mutter.
So we're saying he's safe. The cycle stops there. He's not subsequently going to get his comeuppance?
Correct. It seems like an odd system, because you'd imagine then somebody else might come along and say, you killed my person. But then again, let's say you're the court executioner, in theory, should be careful. But if it's within his rights and it's, you know, law to kill, then he should be able to do it. So that would be the assumption here, that it's pater, meaning he's allowed to do it, and there are no consequences. Kasavar, it sounds like Rav Huna has the view, says the Gemara. Velo ein mishpat mavet. So some of you may have the psukim in front of you, some of you may not. Those of you who don't have it in front of you, it's at the bottom of the page. It is Tet. So right at the bottom of the page, on the Gemara page, you've got all the psukim. It's about 5 lines down on the left. You've got Tet. Pen yirdof goel adam achrei rotzeach. If the goel adam chases after the killer, ki achem levavo, because his heart is all agitated, v'siko ki arbeh aderech, and he catches up with him, eventually v'kayim nefesh, and he kills him, the next 4 words are key. V'lo ein mishpat mavet. And he has no death penalty. Who's he? So you've got two figures. You've got the person who killed by mistake running away. You've got the Goledam chasing him. Then we said, and if he catches up and kills him, lo ein mishpat mavet, he has no death penalty. Who are the possible candidates for who we're saying is it? So it sounds like the straightforward reading is, if he kills him, the Goel Adam is within his rights and he has no death penalty. There is a brighter that's going to say, oh no, it's saying that the person who killed by accident, ein lo mishpat mavet, he didn't deserve capital punishment, so you're not allowed to kill him until he gets to Goel. It's a pushed reading, but that's the way the brighter's about to read it, and we're going to put him in contrast to that brighter. So, kasav lo mishpat mavet, begol adam hu, dichtiv. So it sounds like Rav Huna is saying that he has no death penalty. He's talking about Goel Adam. Meitfei, we've got a brighter that disagrees. Lo mishpat mavet brotzeh hakad medaber. So there is a brighter that says the person who doesn't have a death penalty is the unintentional killer. You can't just go around killing him. He didn't murder. It was an accident. Ata umber brotzeh ha'inu b'Goel Adam. So the brighter itself says, are you sure it's talking about the brotzeh and not the Goel Adam? And the answer the brighter gives is, yes, I'm sure. Why are you asking me? Because you omer v'ulo sen elam in l'sham, when it says following that, that he never hated him before, havei omer v'rotzech akad medaber, hu da amar, full stop. So the next part of the sentence is also talking about the killer. So the first part's also talking about the killer. They don't have a death penalty, they never hated them before, full stop. Hu da amaki atana, detanya, but Rav Huna disagrees and follows the following view. Detanya taught in a bright of lo mishpat mavet. He doesn't have a death penalty, but Goel Adam akad medaber. It's talking about the Goel Adam. If he kills, he doesn't deserve to be killed. He's within his rights to kill the unintentional killer. Ata ama begol Adam akad medaber eno beretzeach. Are you sure it's talking about the Goel Adam, says the brighter? Rav Huna says, yes, I'm sure. Kishu omek ilo sonu mishon shom, when it says, he never hated anyone, that was talking about the killer. Hamani makan vilo mishpat mavet. So why does it have to say they never hated him before and they don't have a death penalty? It must be they're talking about different figures. Begol ha'adam agad medaber, full stop. So we've now got two views. Rav Huna, who says the Goel Adam is allowed to kill somebody on the way, and does not get taken to court for that. They're within their legal rights. And the other view that says you are not allowed to kill on the way to Ari Miklat, the unintentional killer is the person who's not warranted to be killed. Full stop. Now we're going to try to use a Mishnah to disprove Rav Huna. Because again, Rav Huna said a Goel Adam can kill someone on the way to Ari Miklat. Tznan, there was a Mishnah that taught, Mosrilno Shnei Tamidei Chachamim, we, if somebody kills by accident, what's the first thing that court has to do? Somebody kills somebody. The first thing that court does is you appoint them to Talmidei Chachamim. You can imagine, you know, everyone's sitting around in the mirror, and there's like 500 of them in the Bet Midrash, and the back row is on call. Somebody kills by mistake, two of you got to get up and go and walk with them to Ari Miklat. And why do they have to go? Shema yaharugenu b'derech, in case that person gets killed. They're a protective escort. Do they have to physically defend him? Right, so the answer seems to be no. V'yadavar elav, but they speak to him. So they're there, and you can imagine some of them like, no, stop, stop, stop. Oh, all right, we lost one. And go back to Shir. But they're not on physical duty, but they are on verbal duty to give an escort and to advocate the cause of this accidental killer. Now, the Gemara is going to say, what are they meant to say? When we say they're there in case they get killed, they have to speak. What is their job? What do they have to say? They might have to say, we are here as Edim to warn you that if you kill him, you're going to be Chayv Misa. So really, it is a physical protection by saying, we're here to ensure that you get prosecuted if you do anything. We're not going to hurt you. We're not going to physically defend this guy. We're going to shield him with a legal shield, that if you do anything, you'll be prosecuted. That's what it sounds like, which makes it sound like the Goel Adam is not allowed to kill. That's what the Mishnah seems to imply. My love, the Matru Bey, is it not the case that these two Talmid Chachamim are warning the Goel Adam, the Ikatel Baktalu, that if they kill, they will be considered legally a killer and be prosecuted? Lo, no, that is not what they do. Kedetanya, as we have in the following brighter, their job is simply to persuade these people to stop a cycle of violence. Extrajudicial killing is not an ideal, and this is key. The Goel Adam seems to sound like the Torah permits family feuds to go around. People caught killing people who killed their family, even if it was an accident, it sounds like. So what's being set up here is, even according to Rav Huna, it is permissible. You are pater if you're Goel Adam Anyone seen that or read that John Grisham book, movie, A Time to Kill? Anyone familiar with that story? Some of you not? Yeah, it's an old movie. Who's in it? Famous actor. He was also in Superman. What's his name? Oh, no, that was a different... Samuel L. Jackson is in it. I'm thinking about a different John Grisham movie. Samuel L. Jackson's in it. Anyone familiar with Time to Kill? This is in the South. The African-American young girl gets abused and raped and beaten by a couple of young, drunk white guys. And they go to court, and the jury, of course, is 12 white people who are sitting there, and Samuel L. Jackson thinks, oh, by the way, he killed the white people who abused his daughter. He's now on trial for murder for having killed these two white guys, and he's going to be judged by 12 white people who are determining whether he killed, whether it was murder or not. What's his defense, by the way? What defense could you possibly have that it wasn't murder? Oh, right, so that's one. That wouldn't have got him very far. Right, that wouldn't have got him very far in court. His argument was essential insanity, an insanity plea, meaning my daughter had just been abused and raped and beaten. These two guys were taken to court for what they did, and what did they get? They got like a $50 fine or something for what they did. He says, I was so psychologically traumatized by the horror that they committed without justice being visited that I went crazy and I shot them. And I couldn't help. And then there's the kind of the famous end to the movie is the lawyer gives a speech depicting the scene of what happened to this African-American girl. And his last sentence was, now imagine she was white. And you see the whole jury kind of go like that. And then he gets off the hook. So I don't know whether that's, you know, justice is served or not. But the Torah seems to carve out a space that if a family member of yours comes to harm because somebody wasn't paying attention, if somebody kills intentionally, they go to court and we put them to death. Or that's what they would do then. But if somebody kills accidentally, the Torah carves out a space for you to be emotionally wrought. That this is my child. And I understand that it wasn't intentional, but your negligence has ruined my life. And the Torah is giving me space to act on that. And it's not putting up a physical barrier. It's putting up two people who are going to stand there and say, we beg of you not to do this. It wasn't intentional. We're in the process of remedying the situation. He's going off to Ir Miklat, where he's going to learn about how to be more attentive. He's going to be surrounded by people who are trying to train him to know what it's like to live in society. Please don't. But it sounds like if they say, I hear you, I understand what you're saying, but I am Ein lo mishpat mavet. If I kill him, I will not be taken to court. And the Talmid Chacham are going to have to say, yeah, you're within your rights. And they have to turn to their escort and say, you better speed up, my friends. You better run. He's coming for you. But there is this space carved out for at least the path between the death and the Ir Miklat where the killer is. And you can imagine the heart rate going up, and that being the first lesson in being attentive, is that there are consequences to this. Okay. So this is the middle line, essentially. First word in the line is who. It's three lines up in the dark red. Loka the Tanya, no, they don't warn him that if you kill, you'll go to court. Vidabore love Dramari Uinlo, they start trying to convince him not to kill the accidental killer. Omrimlo, Altaregbo Minak Shovche Damim, please don't kill them. Bishkaga Bamasala Yado, it was negligence, it was unintentional, please don't kill him. So full stop. So that is the escort is not there to tell him that he's not within his rights to kill, just to try to persuade him not to. Rav Meir says, the two people are there, but actually the unintentional killer has to advocate for themselves. They have to stand there and take responsibility. Rav Meir says, part of what is rehabilitative here is if you've killed unintentionally, you need to admit that. And you need to turn to the Goel Adam and you need to say, I'm really sorry. It was unintentional. And you need to advocate for yourself, not anybody else. Shneimar, as it says, and you have this in the psukim I gave you as well, it's one of the psukim before, v'zeh davar harotzeach, I bolded it. This is the matter of the killer, which in the pshat is just saying, oh, we're now talking about the topic of an accidental killer, but Rav Meir says it's an indication that you have to speak for yourself if you've killed accidentally. Amro lo, everyone responded to Rav Meir, said, are you crazy? Harve Shlichut Ose, it's much better to have an advocate speak on your behalf. You're an accidental killer. You're not in a position to defend yourself. It's much better to have other people defend you. Full stop. Now, we've got a parenthetical unit in the light shade here where it says, hold on a minute. What they say is, oh, he did this accidentally. And what the Gemara is now going to say, well, obviously, why do they need to say? Why else would he be going to Irmiklat if he didn't do this unintentionally? He'd be going to court. So why do they need to say this? It can't be that that's what they say. And the Gemara is going to essentially conclude, there were actually other people to go to Irmiklat too. Yeah.
Is there any discussion about therapy for the Goel Hadam? In other words, the Goel Hadam, aside from having this conversation in this particular instance, by the Talmidei Chacham and by the accompaniers, in general, they're, like you said, hot under the collar, they're within their rights, there's space for them to feel the way they do. And then the Goel Hadam disappears, I mean the
killer
disappears in Irmiklat, and they're just left with
the trauma.
Does society do anything for them?
Well, it's on this moment before.
So that's for the killer. What about the Goel Adam? Or is she saying somebody who's lost a family member, do they just have to live with the trauma? And so this is a legal discussion. And it sounds like legally there's no implementation to cater for that.
I mean, there is this discussion of the Talmidei Chachamim talking them out of it.
So this is, again, not from a psychological angle. This is from a legal perspective. We're trying to insulate. So the way we've positioned the Masechet is this is political theory. How do societies function? And if you've got vigilante justice built in, society will eventually fall apart because of the psychological consequence. If people can just go around killing people, you're going to have people sitting at bus stops waiting. And you're going to set up signposts, here's the Irmiklat, with three people sitting at the bottom with hacksaws. So we need to set up these kind of buffers to try to stop that happening. But you're right, there are, of course, psychological consequences. And to some degree, we see that in the Irmiklat, because part of the justice system is we're training them to be more attentive. But you'd imagine you'd need, if somebody murdered intentionally, and then they were put to death, the family might need counseling as a response. So those are good questions that aren't really addressed, at least in the legal sections.
Is there an issue...
Yes.
For those who had a hold that you're not allowed to kill the killer Bishoge as he's on his way to the Arei Miklat, you're not allowed to kill him, that can kind of give incentive for this Rotseach to tarry on his way to the Ir Miklat. Because he can be free, he could be out in the free world and still not be subject to being murdered. Just saying, I'm on my way, it's a slow dance to be.
Right, it's a good question, which is maybe what leads the Gemara to take the next step, which is, this is just until court case happens, the court date that's set. And you can go to Arei Miklat in the meantime, but you're still going to get your verdict one way or other. And as soon as the verdict is passed, then you're in trouble, even if you're not there yet. So we'll see. Let's read ahead, and hopefully it'll address your question. Amar said, Bishkaga b'masa liyado, these two escorts turn around to the Goel Adam and say, no, don't kill him. He did it unintentionally. Pshit, obviously, he's going to Arei Miklat. They know he did it unintentionally. Why would they say this? And Debbie, one response might be they're saying this, not because he doesn't know, because they're trying to coax him down, which might be, but that's not where the Gemara goes. They say, Diba Meza Bar Galasu, the Gemara says, would he be going to Arei Miklat if he was killed intentionally? In. And the Gemara says, yes, he might well be on his way because he killed Bemeza. Vahatani, it was taught in a brighter, Abusabi Yoda Omer, Abusabi Yoda says, Bitchila. Initially, Echad Shogav Echad Mezid, whether somebody killed intentionally or unintentionally, like Dimlar Irmiklat, they go to Irmiklat. The Beit Din Shochin Mavino Tam, and Beit Din then goes to get them from there. So that's the answer running to your point. Wherever you are, when it's time for court, the Beit Din is going to come and get you. So you've got the ability to go to Irmiklat in the meantime if you'd like, set up home, get things started. But when the court date is set, you're coming to court, and at that point you'll be vulnerable whether you've made it there or not. This is just talking about that early stage. You've done, someone's died. What do? You go to Irmiklat. And we said the Goel Adam, for some, is not allowed to kill you then. We don't view that way. We said that they can. But either way, the Beis Din is going
to
get you.
So you go to the Irmiklat prior
to court.
To the final court.
Yeah. It's almost like when you're being held on bail. Okay. Like you haven't had your verdict yet, but you're taking refuge. Mishnah Chayv Mita Yargu. if somebody is found, so Beis Din gets you from Eremit Klat, if it turns out you were an intentional killer, you are executed. You end up being put to death if you killed intentionally. True, if you are determined that it was an accident, a complete accident, onus, you are set free. You are set free. Mishin chayv galus, and somebody who ends up being negligent, or verdict is they were negligent, machzir notalim komo, they go back. Shneimar, as it says, v'ashivet o ta'ilat miklato asher nashama, they send them back. So this reading is, somebody dies because of you, you go to Irmikla. The basin then goes to get you. You then, if you are chayv because you killed intentionally, it was mazid, you're executed. If it ends up it was ones, your pater, if it was shogeg, you back, go back to Eremit Klat. Bottom line, it's quite possible the Gol Adam finds you and says, I didn't see, but I heard that you killed my brother, and I'm here to take vengeance. So the Talmidei Chachamim say, no, shogeg ba'aliyado, it came by accident, and intentionally, you might say, oh, I thought it was intentional. I just heard that they died, thank you for telling me. And the Gemara says, shouldn't they get the cue that he's on the way to Eremit Klat, that it was an accident? It says, no, everybody goes to Eremit Klat. So full stop. So bottom line of this whole discussion seems to be, oh, let's finish Rebbe. Rebbe ends the Mishnah by saying, "Oh, Atzman Hengol," and he says, no, if you go b'mezid, you don't really go to Eremit Klat, but people sometimes think that's true, so they went on their own. So you have to say, this isn't a guy who's mistaken, he really did it b'shogeg. So you're just saying it was a case where somebody might run to Eremit Klat if they did it b'mezid, even though it doesn't really work. Bottom line, is it possible somebody goes to Eremit Klat when they didn't kill the shogeg? Yes. So this escort have to turn around to the Gol Adam and say, this was shogeg, please don't kill him. Full stop. End of discussion. Again, this comes back to the central point. Is a Gol Adam allowed to kill before they get to Eremit Klat? And the bottom line is, yes. If you have killed somebody but shogeg, you are instantly vulnerable to a family member, Gol Adam, killing you with impunity. So it sounds like maybe this is part of the rehabilitation, that the system is built in a way that once you have killed accidentally, you have never been more attentive to anything in your life. You are paying, if you hear a twig snap, you think maybe the family's coming around the corner, and this is the first step to you living more attentively and being sensitive to those around you. It's a kind of trial by fire where now you expect that you can legally be killed by anybody, by somebody at any moment. But that's the first step.
Wait a second, Rabbi. Just yeah. The sequence. The killer, let's say he's Bishogeg, the killer, before the court decides anything,
yes,
goes to the Eremit Klat. Who gets the killer to Talmidei Chachamim to go with him?
I mean, it's a good question. It's not dealt with. Meaning, what's the infrastructure here? Is there like a 911 line? You say, I need two Talmidei Chachamim, please?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, the base
manager said, say again?
Well, the base manager said, hey, we need
two. Right, you say you're right. Mincha, Irmiklat.
The other question that comes up is, the guy killed him. It's in his mind whether he was amazing or shogun. No one knows what it's going to be, whether he was amazing or shogun. Because, okay, oh, this guy's coming, I'm going to loosen the bolt underneath this so the ladder falls on him. I mean,
right.
There's a whole different...
So, meaning you're saying, how are they going to prove it in court anyway?
I don't know who made it a show game. And the guy, you know, some guy kills him. He says, I'm going up there. I make believe, hey, I killed him, but I'm going to go up there because... it's going to look like I'm a shogeg. I'll go up there and not worry about it because everybody's going to think I'm a shogeg, but I really want to kill the guy.
Yeah, it's a great question. And to some degree, that kind of is the kind of final reflection of the first parak, which is, how do you ever prove anything? This is Rabbi Akiva says, if I were in charge, no one would ever be put to death. Because I could always say, you know, maybe the guy was a traitor just where the knife went in. So it wasn't really murder. The guy was already dead. Or the final case the Gemara gives is, how can anyone ever get... put away for adultery, meaning witnesses are going to be able to say they physically saw the act of adultery, the penetration, and the Gemara says, no, they just need to know what it was that they saw, which makes them like, basically, justice is approximate. And that was the view of the whole first parak, which is, you're right, it's in their head, and justice on earth is never, ever going to be, we know the absolute truth. And this is a reflection that, you know, I thought it was kind of happenstance at the beginning of the Masechta, where we had all these cases in the public, but it seems to be every week there's a case. This killer in Idaho is going to court now, and they're trying to prove it on the base of a piece of DNA on the bed, and they've got something. And we all are built to assume we'll find the truth. The FBI will eventually dig it up and we'll find it. And every other week, somebody gets let out of jail because they found some DNA evidence that shows it wasn't them. And then you think, does that really prove it wasn't them? The whole area is unknown, which is, and that's the first paragraph, which leads to this paragraph, which is society's only going to work because justice is approximate if we pay attention to each other. And that's what this is about, making us more attentive. And this is the rehabilitation, which is really how we should think about starting Yorel Tzadikim. We have to raise people to be attentive from the start, which is why I maybe shouldn't have yelled, but told my daughter off for doing something unintentionally and instructed her. It's the difference between accidental and unintentional, which I asked her the other day, does she remember the difference from like a month ago? She's like, I don't know what you're talking about, Dave. So, all right, we've got work to do. Yeah. Is there a question? Okay, great. So last 10 lines, which is again part of the definition of what a city needs to be. Amar Blazer, Blazer says, if Sharova Rotschim Einu Koltot, if the majority of Irmitklat, 51% of Irmitklat are killers, it doesn't help. And you can imagine this being a pretty dysfunctional city where like most of the people are murderers. Right, right. Anyone seen, what's that? Was that 1934, this new television series? Or 19, what's the, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Kevin Costner's in it. You know what I'm talking
Yellowstone.
Yellow, oh, Yellowstone, right? And then they made an old version of Yellowstone that like his grandparents, Harrison Ford's in it, who's like his great-grandfather. Did you see Yellowstone?
No.
Oh, I was told it was great television, but very gory. So something I can't watch with Miriam. And don't have time for. But interesting. So you can imagine that not being a very functional society if everybody's a murderer. If you think of Chelm as like dysfunctional because everybody's an idiot, this is like everybody's a murderer. Like everybody's got 14 bolts on their doors. Nobody trusts anyone.
It's tribal society. It's like you hear about the feudings in Appalachia. It's what tribal societies were like.
Right. Or the there was a movie like 15 years ago called The Book of Eli, I think, which is like after nuclear Armageddon, how does society start up again? And everybody's on guard, everybody hates, everybody's killing, there's no law. Meaning, that doesn't work. The fact that Moshe said, this city is an Irmitklat 1,000 years ago, won't help you if most of the people are killers. Again, this is about rehabilitation. And if it turns out that everybody's a killer, it's not going to help you. Which comes back to what we said on the first Amud, which is if the population dwindles, the government has an obligation to repopulate the zone. And you can imagine not wanting to be volunteered to like, oh, you have to go and live in the city of killers because we need to balance out the population. I'm all right, thank you. But then you say, we'll give you $1 million. All right, I'll go. So there are responsibilities. Ezra Blazer says, if most people are killers, it doesn't work. How do we know? There's got to be some evidence that that's true. We've already said, logically, that makes sense. But what's the biblical mandate? First one in line is v'davar, sorry, v'diber, and he speaks, but oznei ziknei ha'ir ha'hi et dvarav. So when this killer first gets to Irmitklat, he has to say to the elders of the city, dvarav, his matter. The implication is, v'lo shashu divrem l'dvarav, that it's his matter and not their matter. Meaning he arrives to the city, if they're a panel of killers, and he starts telling them, oh yeah, we know, we all did the same, that's not going to help. He needs to speak to a group, say, this is what I've done, and I need your help. That's how it works. Armelaz Rablaza says, Irsha Ein Baz Kenim, and on that note, we've said he arises to speak to the Zitkenei Ha'ir. If there are no elders, Einu Koltot, it doesn't work. You need to have a system in place. It can't just be, like you said, the Wild West, where everybody's killers, or even if they're not killers, there's just no coordination, there's no infrastructure. It needs to be a city with courts and elders, public libraries. It needs to be a functioning town in order for it to work. Debe Inan Zitkenei Ira Ha'ir Veleka, full stop. And we're now going to have three other quick cases where you need to have Zakenim in the city for a certain law to work, meaning the city has to be functional as a place of habitation in order for these laws to come into effect. The first one was Irmitklat. Next one. Itmar, Yushen Baz Zakenim. If there is another city where there are no elders, Rabbah Ben Rabasi, there's a debate between Rabbah Ben Rabasi. Chadar Mekoltot, Chadar Meinkoltot, Lamanda Meinkoltot Ben Indiknei Irvaleka, Lamanda Mekoltot Mitzvah Ba'alma. Full stop, that was the first case. Irmitklat, if you don't have Zakenim, there's one view that it works, one view that it doesn't. We've just said that the view taken by Rabbah Elazar also agrees that it doesn't work. V'irshem baz kenim, another case where the city doesn't have elders, Ramam Ramasi, another debate between Ramam Ramasi. Chadam Anasa ben Seremora, Chadam Einasa ben Seremora. Some say ben Seremora only works if it's in a city where there is a kenim. What's the proof? Lamanda Alma, because it, according to one view, Einasa ben Seremora, if someone says it doesn't work, Be'inan Ziknei Iro, in the psukim that describe ben Seremora, it says that there's a kenim are involved. When are they involved? The parents have to go, Le Ziknei Iro. If there's no Tzkenim, Ben Sora Mora doesn't work. So for those who already think Ben Sora Mora is an impossible circumstance because the parents have to sound the same, etc., you also need to be in a city where there are ethical standards. The Manda Manasa Ben Sora Mora, those who say it does work, mitzvah Baalma, means so you go to the Tzkenim, they're there, but if they're not there, it still works as a Ben Sora Mora. Ishmael Tzkenim, last case where there's no Tzkenim, Ramam Ramasi, same debate between the same figures, Chad Ama Mavia Egla Rufa, Chad Ama In Mavia Egla Rufa. So Egla Rufa, this is the case where the animal, the calf, is decapitated. Somebody is found who's deceased out in between cities. We say, okay, whoever's the closest city, the elders of that city have to do a certain ritual to atone for the fact that somebody died near the precincts of their city. Now, we say the elders of the city have to supervise this ritual. So according to one of these views, Rabbi Ramasi, it only really works if there are elders. If there are no elders, this doesn't get off the ground. Which doesn't make it sound like, oh, if there are no elders, we're not responsible for what happens. But the elders are responsible as educational leaders for what happens in their city. And that's going to pivot us to the next stuff. Let's just finish this. So again, three different cases. Eglat Rufa, Ben Sora Mora, and Ari Miklat. Do I need elders in the city to work? And this is going to pivot us, as we say, into the next subject, onto the next stuff, which is, how long does someone have to go to Irim Miklat for if they kill unintentionally? How long is the sentence? Till the Kohen Gadol dies. It is sounds like the most arbitrary sentence you can imagine. At some fundamental level, every sentence is arbitrary. If somebody kills accidentally and they say, okay, 18 years. On what basis 18 years? Who decides that's going to make them better, that's what they deserve? Everything's arbitrary. So we just need to account for what the standards are. So we're going to talk about why the Kohen Gadol dying might be key. Who counts as the Kohen Gadol? What happens if the Kohen Gadol is the accidental killer? Does he ever go free? Or is he kind of, well, I'm going to go free when I die? That's going to be an odd kind of, I have to do one of those James Bond, fake my own death, legally dead, and then come back to life, and now I can go free. So we'll talk about why he is kind of the measure of society, and to some degree that feeds off this notion that without Zikne Ha'ir, it's not a functional city. You need to have leaders in place. You need to have institutions and wise people in place. So, full stop. My tea is now seeped. Not next week, but the week after, we'll turn on to Yud Aleph, Ahmed Aleph, and we'll go forward. Thank you all. Have a wonderful week. Okay. Benching.